Hi everyone, welcome to China Money Podcast, your weekly dose of local knowledge on investing in China. I'm your host, Nina Xiang. If you're listening for the first time, China Money Podcast is a weekly new media program aimed at international institutional investors and investment professionals in Asia with a focus on investing in China. Every week, I talk to a China-based fund manager, an industry expert, an analyst, or an economist. We discuss strategy, industries, opportunities, and challenges. To get our program, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or go to our website at chinamoneypodcast.com and sign up to our newsletters. You can also like our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at chinamoneypod. A big thanks to those of you who have gone to our website, clicked on our sponsors' banner ads, and signed up to their services. Thank you so much for your support. It means a lot to us. If you haven't done so, and if you'd like to support us, it's simple. Only takes a few minutes. Just go to chinamoneypodcast.com and click on our sponsors' ads. Thank you so very much. Our guest today is Andrei Lustrak-Pietri, Chairman and Managing Partner at A Capital, a private equity firm focused on Chinese outbound investments into Europe. Previously, Andrei co-founded CEL Partners, a European growth capital fund focused on clean tech and healthcare in China. Before that, he was at Jaka Capital Fund focused on Vietnam and China. In the beginning of his career, he worked at Aerospatial Airbus. He holds both German and French citizenships. Before we go to the interview, let's quickly go through the news the past week. Everything seems to be about the new leadership headed by Xi Jinping. You can see reports everywhere about how reforms will start and how people are hopeful about this new leadership. I'm feeling rather cool towards OZ's frenzy. People have had misplaced hopes many times before. Maybe it's too early to get excited. Let's see what they do, not what speeches they have made. But I do like to share something from Thomson Reuters' latest Leaper Fund Market Insight report. One interesting thing from the report is relating to the performance of qualified foreign institutional investors' performance. Until the end of October, there are 192 QFIIs with increasing numbers of QFIIs. There are obviously more influence on the part of foreign investors on the Chinese stock market, but they're not doing that well in terms of performance. According to this report, QFII's A-share funds averaged down 1.31% in October, and for year-to-date, the performance is down 4.39%. That's worse than pure Chinese domestic funds and compared to the S&P 500's index, which is up 8% year-to-date. On the other hand, qualified domestic institutional investors, the QDII's year-to-date performance was up 6.14%. Much, much better than domestic stock funds' performance. So at least so far this year, the only thing that the QFII funds shared from the Chinese stock markets are losses. Okay, that's the news. Let's now go to the interview with Andrei from A Capital. He talked to me in Beijing. If you're listening to the audio podcast, feel free to check out our video version on our website on YouTube or in the iTunes store. Hope you enjoy it. Andrei, welcome.
Hello, Nina.
First, give us a brief introduction of your firm, A Capital.
Okay. A Capital is a European fund. It's a European growth capital fund. And basically, we are the specialist of cross-border investments between Europe and China. What we do is we specifically invest in European companies which have very strong growth potential in China. And the second thing which probably really makes us unique is that once we have taken the decision to invest, we bring with us a Chinese strategic co-investor which has what it takes for the company in which we invest to succeed in China. So we invest, a Chinese co-investor comes with us, and together we make sure that the company in which we invest is very successful in China by aligning the interests of all the parties.
You have an euro fund and also an RMB fund.
That's right.
And the euro fund is about 250 million euros. That's your target size?
Exactly.
And you have about almost that?
Well, we have raised a significant portion of that. We have actually just, our fund is relatively new. We are a little bit more than a year old. We've already done two deals. So basically, we did the first closing a couple of months ago, where two major institutional investors, one from China and one from Europe, invested.
The Belgium institution is a Belgium federal holdings.
That's right.
And the Chinese institution you mentioned was the China Investment Corporation. They both invested in the Euro fund?
Exactly. I mean, both of them invested in our Luxembourg fund. Our fund is actually a regulated fund, so even if we don't have a very large size, in Europe you need to be regulated over 500 million euro. We decided, because of the quality of the investors we have, to be regulated by the Luxembourg Financial Authority. We have a second fund, which we have done in partnership with the Beijing municipal government, very specifically with the Beijing Office of Financial Works, which helped us to set up a fund which has the uniqueness of being the first body which is allowed to raise money in RMB and to invest it overseas. So both funds, the Euro fund and the RMB fund, will be investing pari passu, that means in completely parallel terms and ways. The thing is that we first focused on raising the Euro fund, which is for us the most important because we invest in Europe. And the RMB fund is actually a tool for us to allow Chinese LPs who have RMB to deploy, who cannot necessarily invest overseas, to invest through our vehicle.
There are some other similar funds to yours, Mandarin Capital, which has been featured on our program previously. They are China, Italy / China Europe focused. And then there's Cathay Capital, which is China French. What are some similarities and differences between you and those two?
First, I want to say it's a new strategy. So it's always good to have people where you can benchmark yourself. I am both German and French. There must be 120 PE funds in Germany. There are 140, there are actually more in France. So if there are three or four funds doing cross-border, that's actually very good and very healthy. That's one thing. The second thing, these two funds are, as you mentioned, very focused on one country. We think that the right dimension when you are doing something out of China is the European continent. We have a strategy of going in three different sectors. Basically, our main theme is urbanization, which is a theme which is going to be very strong for the next 10, 20, 30 years in China. So one of the consequences of urbanization is that people will shop, consume differently. So retail formats and brands. Obviously, the two deals we did, Club Méditerranée and Bang & Olufsen, are in this first category. The second category we're investing in is everything around transportation, because what urbanization means that the way cities are structured, the way people are transported, commuting, is changing. So airports are built, roads are built, logistics become a very important topic. This is the second theme. And the third theme is urbanization means also much more pressure on the daily life. So everything which is quality of life, that means food safety and environmental technology, healthcare, and especially the aging challenge, is a third big topic. And when you look at that, Europe, with its diversity, has clusters in Germany for automotive, for example, in the Nordic country or in France for water treatment or for environment, in France and Italy, for example, for brands.
Your strategy is to focus on China, Europe, cross-border.
Yes.
And companies that can leverage their own specialty expertise and markets to achieve mutual benefits. Now Europe is burdened by the Euro crisis, yep. And China's economy is also slowing. What's your outlook on how your strategy can be successfully implemented in the next few years?
Well, the interesting thing is that our strategy is to look at companies which have very strong growth potential in China. And interestingly enough, it actually used to be a niche strategy in Europe until 3 or 4 years ago. Because until 3 or 4 years ago, people were growing pretty well in Europe, or they were growing in Eastern Europe. But today, with very low growth perspective, as you mentioned, in Europe, as well as in Western countries, to be successful in China is not anymore a nice to have, is an absolute obligation. So even if China is slowing down, and as you know, is very relative, I mean, there are still most of the areas that we mentioned, environment, consumption, transportation, are still growing 50% between exactly 10 to 20%. That's one thing. And second thing, what we are focused on is actually companies which have potential but which have not been so successful as they should be. I give you the example of the Danish high-end brand in which we just invested.
Bang & Olufsen.
What people need to realize is that it's a company which actually is still very focused on Europe, and one of their key strategy is to be successful in Asia, which they did not focus so much until a new management came in 18 months ago.
We're going to continue this discussion, but before that, let's talk a little bit about your own professional career. Before founding A Capital, you worked at CEL Partners.
That's
it's
right.
Also a European growth capital,
yep,
focused on China. When did you initially become attracted to the Chinese markets?
Well, it's completely coincidence. I went into private equity in 2001, before I was with Airbus in Toulouse, the plane maker. And it's actually a European family, which was in its second generation, going into the third generation, which wanted to build up its own family office-backed fund. So for 5 years, I worked with them.
Can you tell us who this family is?
Yeah, it's a family called Burel, and they own one of the largest independent tier one automotive supplier. Just to give you an example, it's not a very sexy product, but it's a very important product. They're the world leaders for gas tanks, so where you put your gas in. And it's actually very important because it's a very sensitive part, because obviously that's where you put the gas, and it's very always dangerous. I mean, and so it's a very profitable business. The head of the family in 2001 thought it was important for the family to diversify their assets. So that's what I did. And I used to go to China on a very personal note. I went trekking a lot since 2001.
In China? So,
yes. I went. I knew China more from Yunnan, from Xinjiang, from Tibet, rather than the big cities. But I felt this entrepreneurial spirit. I heard about these funds being set up. I saw all these private companies emerging, which today are giants for some of them. And so I partnered with somebody I knew which had the same idea, and we set up a fund which was a growth capital fund, around $70 million, and we very quickly specialized the fund into clean tech and healthcare. One of the issues and one of the big challenges we had was to recruit local GPs. The number of GPs, of professional fund managers, was still very limited, probably 100, 150 people. It was not easy for a new fund like us to attract them. And so slowly we built up the Chinese team. It was challenging. And when the end of the investment period came up and we attracted six Chinese fund managers, I saw that my added value as a Laowai here, as a foreigner in this country, was actually reducing. And so in 2010, for me, it was obvious that the added value of foreigners, they really need to be ultra-specialized to justify, because you now have so many high-quality GPs which are doing fantastic. But on the long run, private equity is a local business, which actually turns to our advantage today is I think it's very challenging for Chinese to invest in France, to invest in Germany, to invest in Denmark, to invest in Italy, if they're not French, German. So this is the story.
That's interesting. As we were talking earlier that you're a new fund, but you were able to attract Belgium Federal Holdings and also China Investment Corp. That's a great achievement for particularly a newer fund like yours. How did you manage to do that?
Well, obviously, I cannot give you all the recipes, and I don't want to speak on behalf of my investors. But I think the reason we attracted these two very important LPs, which normally don't invest in first-time funds, is because of this unique strategy of investing in Europe but bringing with us strategic core investors. This is absolutely unique. That's one thing. And secondly, because actually when you look at the number of outbound deals out of China, I must say very few are successful so far. And I think the two that we made are probably among the few which are doing very well.
Obviously, you monitor the trend between China-European cross-border deals. What are some major trends you see that's going to emerge in the next few years in the M&A scene?
We launched our own research on that we call the Dragon Index, which is actually every quarter we are publishing very hopefully as academic as possible research analyzing with the same methodology every quarter where exactly and what kind of investment comes out of China. So it's not just Europe, it's a global study. The trend we see, one, Europe in 2011 has been the first destination with a third of all the M&A done from Chinese companies. They're around $68 billion invested last year. Half is greenfield investments, half is M&A. And out of this approximately $34 billion, a third goes to Europe, so around $11 billion. Approximately $6 billion goes to North America, evenly split between the U.S. and Canada. Around $9 billion goes to Africa, and so on. Interestingly, half of the deals are resource. I would say this is the usual story, Chinese companies buying mines or oil fields. But half of them is more or less evenly split between technology deals and deals in services, and a third into retail and brands. So you see more and more non-resources deals growing. The second trend is we see more and more private companies. From the volume, it's still very dominated by SOEs, state-owned enterprises, because the state-owned enterprises are those who are involved in a resources deal. But as far as numbers is concerned, in 2010, it was approximately 20% of the deals done by private companies in value. It was already a third in 2011. So this is growing. And the third trend, the last quarter, so the second quarter 2012 that we monitored, our Dragon Index showed that 70% of the deals are minority deals, which I think is very interesting because most of the deals we saw in the past were majority deals and very often deals into bankrupt companies.
Now, your last deal, your co-investment in Bang & Olufsen, which is a premier brand in audio equipment. You are a private equity firm.
Yeah.
But that investment is into a public company. How do you justify investing into a public company while charging $220?
This is the same question that our LPs ask us, and it's a very valid question. We are a private equity fund, so our purpose is that most of the deals that we are doing and all the deals we are going to do will be private deals. It's very simple. You know, when you start a fund, you're an entrepreneur yourself, and you need to be cautious. And when you do a deal into a private company, you need to involve a lot of due diligence, which means also very big risk and breakup fees if you don't invest. And that's something that when you start is very difficult to have as a burden. So that's one reason, so to minimize the risk. And the second reason we're very open about that is also very strategic, is that we wanted to do deals which are very obvious. Everybody in the world knows Club Méditerranée, it's a global brand. Everybody in the world knows Bang & Olufsen, it's a global brand too. And so people understand our strategy immediately. Having two first deals which are in very high visible companies is a great way for us to explain our strategy, which is a new one. Of course, now the focus of the entire team is to focus on private companies because we are a private equity fund.
Lastly, here in Beijing, 18th Congress just finished. So there is a lot of new hopes and new inspirations for people here. What are some things that you hope to see that the new government, the new leadership would initiate?
Well, let me just first tell you a personal story. For a new fund which is starting, which is modest and which is trying to do a hard work, we have been very fortunate because our first closing was done at the time where Vice Premier Li Keqiang was in Brussels. So actually the first closing was in the presence of Li Keqiang, which obviously is for us great news because he is now the premier, the future premier. I have some memories of when I first came to China and where there was this entrepreneurial hope, which was the reason I mentioned to you why I came, because I saw this spirit, and which is always very refreshing when you come from Europe, is that people are looking forward to the future and they think the future is going to be even better than the past. China made amazing changes in 30 years. Europe is also on its way to kind of change massively. So I think the situation is worrying, but the political will and the entrepreneurial will is very strong. So I'm pretty hopeful.
Well, Andrew, wish you great future success, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Nina. It was a pleasure.